P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Do you think Anthony Hopkins likes going by Anthony or like I've heard Anthony Hopkins. Like it sounds like people have said, like other actors have said Anthony.
Like just, Mark Anthony, like no
yeah,
TH?
Yeah, like just like that very Italian, like Anthony, he's such a good boy.
No. No? I've never heard that. Tony Hopkins.
Sir, yes, Tony Hopkins. What's like Tone. The other, yeah, like everyone says, like, you know, like Bob De Niro.
It's
like,
I hate that.
Bob De Niro. Like, I don't get if he just like becomes friends with someone, he's like, oh, I'm Bob. It's like, yeah. Still, like, I don't
You're
know.
Not, Robert like, De Niro will never be Bob.
Yeah, like you again, if
my
we're just,
Bob, my
if
Uncle
we're promoting
Bob.
A film and we're talking about like and the actor's talking about his like working with Robert De Niro, I don't care if you've become friends with him, just still in the talking about a movie, refer to him as Robert, just for like us, you know.
No, but you know that's a whole the whole name drop thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Oh, it's, Bobby D.
Yeah. That's all. Like, oh yeah, Bob was over my house. Yeah,
Tony Hopkins and Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony.
What is he, Welsh?
Yes, I believe he's Welsh. I know that from The Trip.
Oh, really?
Well, because he's the triumphant. It's like Tom Jones, Anthony Hopkins, and
I love that
Rob Brydon.
Two Welsh people starred in Zorro.
Who?
Him and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, I didn't know. I was like, is Tom Jones in Zorro? Because he was in, like, Mars Attacks.
Wait, Tom Jones is Welsh?
Oh,
I'm sorry,
yeah.
I just missed you saying that.
Yeah, Tom Jones is Welsh.
That's weird.
It's mentioned in The Trip a lot.
I have to go see the third one.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun!
Tommy?
It's a tape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hey, Hoff fans. Welcome to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. And today we're talking about, I guess our first real horror film, or horror thriller.
Yeah.
We had kind of a horror comedy before, with My Boyfriend's Back.
Yeah, but this
and
is...
this is definitely a different
this, I mean,
genre.
That's much more closer, like, this is like a horror thriller... But that one, whatever you want to call it, horror comedy, like, that is much more, like, campy comedy. This is...
Yeah, this is not really camp.
Yeah, no, this is definitely not camp. I mean, this is... It's interesting, because you look at... Well, wait, have we even said it? Red Dragon is
the film. The film is Red Dragon.
Yeah. So it's the third and final performance by Sir Anthony Hopkins as the character Hannibal Lecter.
And it's one of... Now, so many of this, like, on-screen Hannibal material, the
yes.
Hannibal legend. Does it have a name? Like, the Hannibal saga? Because not everything's in the same universe, obviously, because the new series, it's not on anymore, but the newest thing was the series, right?
Yeah.
And that's not on the same
No, that universe, was its own... And, no, the only three that were in the same universe are... Well, I guess Hannibal Rising,
I think, is in the same universe, technically.
Yeah, technically. But definitely
actors, but.
Silence of the Lambs, and then... I didn't think it was this close in time, but it was only a year before that Hannibal came out before this.
Only a year before?
Yeah, like a year or two at the most.
It must have been like, oh, Silence of the Lambs did well, let's do this, okay, let's give them two sequels.
Yeah, I mean, Silence of the Lambs was like 91, though, and then this is 2002, so I mean,
gotcha.
Hannibal... was directed by Ridley Scott. It's not good.
No, I haven't seen it in a very long time.
No.
I just remember it kind of like...
It got, like, smashed by critics. Did well in the box office, but...
But what's... Julianne Moore
yeah.
is in it, and she was nominated for Best Actress.
Really?
Or Supporting Actress.
Ah.
Yeah. Because she's one of the few people... And now we're going off on a tangent, I understand this, but she's one of the few people...
Oh, to play, like,
To be nominated for the same character.
Yeah.
As... But she didn't win, of course.
Like
Jodie
a Bobby
Foster.
D scenario.
Bobby D, yes. Robert De Niro. For The Godfather, famously, Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
But of course, we are talking about this film because our guy, Philip Seymour Hoffman, is in it.
Yeah, it's interesting. So again, we're getting like a little bit of I mean, it's cool that he's in a bigger movie. You know, this is definitely like it got like an October release. I watched the trailer for it this morning. It's kind of cheesy. It definitely like sold the like not a Halloween vibe, but definitely like, oh, Halloween's coming up and you want to be scared, go see this movie. Like,
yeah, I think, and we'll get into this later, but I think they were really, obviously Hopkins won the Academy Award for Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
But I think they were really trying to spin off Hannibal, like a Jason, you know, like a Freddy Krueger. And he's so much more like, I don't know. He doesn't go with like the cheesy horror monster.
No. I read something that Anthony Hopkins decided to come back a third and final time because he felt that Hannibal, you know, like the Ridley Scott sequel made Hannibal a little bit too much of like an anti-hero in a way. You know, like he gets away in the end of that film. So Hannibal technically in the world is still, you know, at large.
Yeah.
There we go.
English lessons.
Yes. By Sir Anthony Hopkins.
I haven't seen that movie again probably since like Blockbuster times. So I didn't even remember that he got released from prison. I just remember that it wasn't great. And it was kind of, even at the time, I remember them saying like,
he fed Ray Liotta's brain. So that's kind of cool.
Just wow. Like, I remember people being like, wow, Anthony Hopkins did such a good job in... not that I don't think he did a bad job on Hannibal, but like Silence of the Lambs is one of the all-time great films.
Yes.
And Jonathan Demme, right?
Yeah.
And Hannibal just...
Yeah, but I think he brought it in this film.
Yeah.
There's definitely some chilling moments, and it definitely... I think this film brought it back to like the Silence of the Lambs like roots of like definitely that more like
thriller. They certainly tried, and sometimes they hit that really heavy.
Yeah.
But before all that, let's get down to some business, shall we, Kyle?
Sure.
So we've really been liking your feedback on our Facebook page and on social media. We thought your comments have been awesome lately. And we just wanted to give a shout-out to some random comments we picked. We're not singling these out because we think they're, like, better than the other comments.
Yeah, but, like, one from each of, like, you know, recent episodes.
Yeah, just some stuff that tickled our fancy a bit.
Yeah, so we just want to thank Eric for sharing a great article on Schenectady, New York.
Yeah, can't wait to talk about that film.
Yeah, that's going to be a really fun one. And then Jennifer commented on Love Liza, just, you know, showing her hometown pride for Mobile, Alabama, and that's, you know, that's where they filmed that movie.
Yeah, I think we talked about them filming in the South there.
So yeah, so that's kind of cool that she got to experience and realize that, and she loves the film, Liza. So if you haven't checked out that film yet, definitely check it out. It's worth a view. And then Lonnie sharing his knowledge. This sounded really cool, actually. Lonnie sharing his knowledge on the Almost Famous Director's Cut and it having, you know, like some more tracks of the band and stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, six Stillwater songs.
Yeah, and that's really cool. I need to find that.
Apparently extended. I had no idea there was a director's cut like that.
I need to check on Amazon if there's like a used copy or one I can still buy for like probably like $100 or something.
Definitely something we need to check out.
But yeah, just you know, those are just a few of the people, great people that Hoff fans that have been commenting, and so we just want to thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. And even this episode, please comment, share, even if they're negative comments, we'll take them. We love hearing your feedbacks, and thanks so much.
Yeah.
So today's episode, Red Dragon.
I enjoy this movie every
and
time.
You'd
I
seen
watch
it before,
it.
Yes, clearly.
I've seen it several times.
I'd seen it like once or twice, not in a while. Yeah. It's a good movie. It's not Silence of the Lambs.
No, it's not Silence of the Lambs. It doesn't. Nothing against my main man Brett Ratner, but it just doesn't have the aesthetic, just like the film language that of one of the. Honestly, it is one of the most genius films of all time, Silence of the Lambs.
Even you can even watch it today, and you get a little chilled at certain scenes.
Oh yeah, know? It's just an absolutely terrifying film, and just has some of the greatest performances, some of the most memorable characters, and obviously that comes from the novel and a great screenplay.
Yeah,
we should say
this is based on a series of novels.
Yeah, book series. And so this is from the first one.
Which, correct me
was
if I'm wrong,
adapted before.
Yes, it was adapted before.
Manhunter is
the name.
Yeah,
it was called Manhunter. Have you ever seen that one?
No. I've only seen clips of Brian Cox's performance, who's a fantastic actor, and he played Hannibal in that. And also has, I always forget the actor's name, but he's from like CSI, like the original CSI in like Vegas.
Oh, that guy, yeah. William Peterson? Yeah. Is that him? Yeah. I'm not sure. I know who you're talking about. I didn't realize he was in this movie. Dennis Farina, I know, is in this movie. He's like a like a old timer kind of. I think he passed away.
But yeah.
Rest in peace, Dennis Farina.
Yeah, he was great. He was a great Chicago. We were in Chicago recently.
Yeah, we were.
He was a great Chicago.
For Almost Famous. Check that episode out.
Yeah.
No, I had not ever seen this film. I knew that
Manhunter, like, directed by Michael Mann.
Michael Manhunter. Yeah, I mean, it's a Michael Mann film, so
yeah.
Do you know if it got like good reviews? Or?
It got, no, that's the whole thing. It didn't do well in the box office. Came out in like 1986, I want to say. Didn't do well in the box office, but is revered by critics as like a good film.
It's, you know, it's the same distributor.
Yes, as Silence of the Lambs. And then it moved over to Universal.
Oh, no. Studio, yes, but De Laurentiis is the producer. De Laurentiis of all these films.
So wow.
I guess he just decided to reboot Red Dragon. Probably, you know, capitalizing on the Silence of the Lambs.
Well, yeah, just if you have an opportunity to work with Anthony Hopkins again to have him repeat an Oscar-worthy performance, you might as well do it.
Yeah.
And you got, and you built up an all-star cast of Ed Norton, Ralph Fiennes. Come on, he's one of the
great.
Ralph
Fiennes, yeah. Spelled Ralph.
Again, yeah, Ralph. Again, he's someone, you know, I would call him Ralphie Fiennes.
Ralphie Fiennes.
And then Harvey Keitel, who, you know, is obviously like fallen off in latter years, but he does a decent job as the character of Jack Crawford.
He's better as Judas in The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah, watch that movie if you don't get that joke. Yeah. Well, it's not really a joke.
And then we've got Emily Watson coming back. We just covered her in Punch Drunk Love.
Yeah, so somebody who's worked with Phil before.
Not a great role, but Mary Louise Parker is in it, and I love her. and then, of course, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes, Philip
Seymour Hoffman.
As another Freddy, I was going to say.
Freddy Lowndes.
So, Kyle, I don't know if you saw this, but once again, this is another film that Jack Black was up for the part for.
Yep.
That was crazy.
Fantastic.
Oh, poor Jack Black.
Poor Jack Black. I mean, I kind of started saying it before, but it was a bit of a step back.
Yeah.
But it is cool that he's in, like, again, this is like a bigger movie, but there
not
is
too many
that
Hoffman scenes.
Definitely, the clip that we're definitely going to play for you later is just like a meaty, you know, really good between Rafe and, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman. And it's like a nice 5 minute, just like a chewy scene. And so he gets that great time with another great, you know, character actor, such as Ralph Fiennes. And, you know, that's definitely a big part and a huge compliment out to Philip Seymour Hoffman. Another trivia thing I know we both read is that Anthony Hopkins asked Brett Ratner. At first, Brett Ratner was actually, I read this in the trivia, and then I read an article where it went a bit more into detail. And Brett Ratner was a little nervous at first because he gets a call from Anthony Hopkins saying, oh, can I come to set on, you know, like a day off, you know, that I have and you know, just come to set and visit it. And he's like, oh, is something wrong? Do we need to talk about something? He's like, no, I just saw on the call sheet that Philip Seymour Hoffman is in this movie and I'm a big admirer of his. So I want to come see him act.
That's amazing.
That's awesome. And then Brett Ratner, after Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, completed his scenes and stuff like that, then let him know. And he said he was, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman said he was very humbled by it. I mean, you know, again, Anthony Hopkins not doing, he's, you know, been playing Odin for a couple of years now in the Thor movies. Hasn't been doing much, but he is. He's just one of the
Westworld.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's
screw me.
Pretty big.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah.
What did you think of Hoffman's performance here?
I love it. He plays the role of, spoiler alert, he gets captured by our main villain in this movie, the Tooth Fairy, a.k.a. Red Dragon, a.k.a. Francis Dollar... how do you say it? Dollarhide?
Dollarhide, yeah.
Yeah. And he gets captured by him and killed, but just the clip that we're going to play, he just plays... Well, two things. He plays such a slimy character that just as far as like a we'll even label him a C or D level bad guy in this movie, and then just flips the coin to just like terrified. He just plays two very great emotion, you know, driven characters.
So ready to have your mind blown?
Go, should, please.
This is the first, or I could have missed something because I don't dig through all critical reviews.
Okay.
This is the first film that we've done together that I've actually seen a couple negative reviews for Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance.
Ooh.
Which, I mean, most people loved it. Most people really liked it.
His performance?
His performance in the film. But there are, like, one guy, J.R. Jones from the Chicago Reader, who's called the top critic.
I'm going back to Chicago.
Who's called the top critic, according to Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
Said, Frank Whaley and Philip Seymour Hoffman play minor characters so annoying that they might as well wear t-shirts saying, eat my brain.
All right. What's his name?
J.R. Jones.
J.R. Jones, you're on watch.
So the main criticism of this film, though, is that it was just trying too hard to be Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, well, Brett Ratner, he's kind of this... He was really, from an early age, brought in by actually Steven Spielberg. And kind
oh, really?
Of, yeah, and kind of groomed a bit. They are chosen ones.
Members of the tribe. L'chaim.
L'chaim. If anyone gets laid tonight, it's because of Eric Bana in Munich. People, what movie is that? And you'll get a Philip Seymour Hoffman prize.
Yes, trivia.
Yeah.
Trivia right there. What movie is that from?
Yeah. If any of us get laid tonight, it's because of Eric Bana in Munich. Anyway, I think, you know, if you're kind of groomed and brought in by one of the greatest filmmakers of all time... You probably, and not that I see this in his films, but you probably just have a bit of like, I need to pay homage to these people, or like a little bit of like, well, they did it, I can't do, almost like a pressure, like I can't do it better, so I might as well try to be or do what they did. So I think in this case, you know, they tried to bring it back to that vibe. And again, Jonathan Demme, one of the greatest directors, filmmakers of all time.
Yeah, and I think, though, a lot of... I know Hannibal, I think, was successful in the box office, but it was critically panned.
Mm-hmm.
I think they wanted to go back to that Silence of the Lambs feel.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm 50-50 on this. Yeah, a lot of it feels like they're trying too hard at certain points, but it did restore more of the Silence of the Lambs feel rather than the forced feel of Hannibal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Hannibal tried to make it almost like set mostly in Italy, so I don't want to say it had like a James Bond like country hopping vibe, but it almost made this like glamorous like Hannibal abroad kind of vibe to it.
Well, like, I think it's maybe what he said that kind of made him like an anti-hero.
Yeah, like it was just too much. It became because there was this really weird, I don't know how much you remember that film, but you had a great actor playing this really stupid role of this like victim of Hannibal Lecter's, and it was played by Gary Oldman.
Really?
Yeah, he's caked under that makeup. He's like really scarred, and he gets fed to the pigs at the end.
I don't remember.
It's just a really weird character in this weird scene.
Gary wasn't playing the pigs.
Yeah, exactly. It was Gary Oldman. You get your dollars worth when you hire Gary Oldman. But yeah, so they brought it back to its roots. I mean, there's no doubt this has a very like the style they tried to make it, but just from the story point of view, it's again Hannibal assisting from a jail cell. So it is very similar.
They're taking that from the book, so it's not.
No, I know.
You can't 100% blame Brett Ratner for that. So Brett Ratner, of some of the films that we've talked about most in our lives, probably Rush Hour.
Yeah, Rush Hour, Rush Hour 2.
Rush Hour 3.
Rush Hour 3.
One of the X-Men.
Yeah, X-Men 3. Family Man.
Nick, for those...
For Cage Club out there, Family Man.
Michael Manzi and Joey Lewandowski. Yeah. Family Man, Cage Club. Check it out at cageclub.me.
They filmed that right around where we grew up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in 8th grade, I remember, and everyone was like, oh, it's a Tom Hanks movie. It's like, no, it's Nick Cage. Like,
what?
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, he's a decent enough filmmaker. But so when you're just going toe to toe with Silence of the Lambs, most people are gonna.
Of course.
Not, I don't want to say fail, but it's just not gonna surmount to that.
He's probably I don't know who directed the Hannibal Rising. Anyone of note? I'm not sure, but I was gonna say
that got like really that one very much. If people thought that Hannibal made him into an anti-hero. Hannibal Rising, really, that just ruined any prequel, like giving explanation to mass murderer and stuff like that. Like, they make it that, like, he was growing up in Russia and Russian soldiers, like, kill and eat his sister.
And that's how he, oh my god.
Like, and then that's just,
I wonder if that's based on directed it?
Peter Weber.
Yeah, I'm not too sure who that is.
Sorry, I don't know the career of Peter Weber.
I would say Brett Ratner, of so far until Hannibal Rising, is kind of the weakest name. Even after doing all those films, you have Michael Mann.
Yeah.
You have Jonathan Demme. Even Ridley Scott is, I mean, even of course, he didn't do a great job.
No, he is ultimately, Ridley Scott has made much better films than Brett Ratner, is a better filmmaker, even though I don't like the whole new way that the Aliens franchise is going. But, I mean, come on, we've got a new Blade Runner coming out that he produced, and then obviously he directed the original. And there's just so many great movies that Ridley Scott did. But I will say I like this more than Hannibal.
Yeah, I mean, Brett and Ratner.
But I haven't seen Manhunter, so I can't. I will, for now, say, you know, Silence of the Lambs, Red Dragon, Hannibal.
But
Hannibal
you could
Rise.
Make the strongest argument, I think, that this is Brett Ratner's best film.
This, or I would say, off my feelings, Family Man. But
fair, I mean, yeah. But that's the, like, this is
his biggest attempt at, like, I don't know.
Because I mean, X-Men, that whatever X-Men he does gets shit on all the time.
Yeah.
I like Rush Hour 2.
Oh yeah, no, I love the no. I mean, that's the whole
Rush
thing.
Rush Hour
3
is not that great.
No, Rush Hour and Rush Hour 2 are great action comedy movies.
Money Talks is another movie he did with Chris Tucker.
Oh, yeah.
But this is not the Brett Ratner podcast, unfortunately.
No.
This is the Philip Seymour Hoffman podcast.
Yeah, and one other, before we get like kind of get talking about the movie, one other interesting thing, and it pertains to next week's episode, is that Ed Norton, he says that he took every penny from like that he made on this film to help finance The 25th Hour, which again will be the episode, the film that we cover next week.
Ah, yeah, with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, with Phil. Yeah, well,
we don't
of course.
Switch to Ed Norton. Speaking of Ed,
no, we're not switching to an Edward Norton. You know,
I thought it was funny. Colin Bressler on last week's episode thought that Philip Seymour Hoffman might have been in Keeping the Faith.
Oh yeah,
with Ed Norton.
And
there's another actor in here,
Ken Lung.
Yeah, who's also in Keeping the Faith.
And X-Men 3, directed by Brett Ratner.
Oh, mind blown! 6 degrees of Ken Lung or whatever his name is. Anywho. So this movie starts out, this might have been the worst part of the film to me.
Really?
This
I enjoy this opening.
I did not enjoy this opening.
Okay.
And here's why. This is the most obvious thing to me.
That he looks that much older?
Huh?
That he looks that much older, Anthony Hopkins?
Oh, no, not even that.
Okay.
This is the most obvious thing to me. Let's tie this into Silence of the Lambs. This will be funny, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it's just too, like, what are we eating? Ha ha. You know? I didn't mind him like going to the dinner party. I didn't like so
the
much.
Dinner party. Yeah,
yeah.
So,
I didn't mind.
Well,
going
yeah,
to the
it starts
opera
out with him
there.
At the opera, and this like what flautist is screwing up or whatever. And you just see like,
and he's upset.
Yeah, him like cringing and stuff like that.
I didn't mind the angle that they were going with and showing this story.
But just these very fake like high society people. You're saying,
yeah, because that's not the tone of the film.
Yeah,
you know. And I thought they were doing too many, like, cues. Haha,
cheeky,
look at the
cheeky. Yeah,
look at the camera. No, like, look at the camera, Silence of the Lambs, look at the camera. Like, oh, I kill people and make them eat them, and I eat them too, you know. Oh, there's Chianti at the table, you know.
Fantastic.
Like, it's I fully expected Anthony Hopkins to look at the camera, stare, and be like, you know, you remember guys,
remember,
right?
I want an Oscar. Yeah.
Exactly. And that part bothered me. But I do really like that first interaction between Anthony Hopkins and Ed Norton.
Yeah, so his character's name is Will Graham. Oh, did I even kind of... I didn't give my...
Oh, yeah, why don't you tell everyone what this movie's about?
Sure. Red Dragon is about retired FBI agent Will Graham, played by Edward Norton, coming back to help on a new deadly case, but he has to receive assistance from the most notorious serial killer of them all, who he just happened to take down, Hannibal Lecter.
Sounds good.
Boom.
Are you an Ed Norton guy?
I like Ed Norton. I could see he's been in some great movies. He's had some memorable performances. So he's totally an actor that I would get if someone said, like, oh, he's my favorite actor. It's like almost like on the same, like, he's just not necessarily one of my favorite actors. I almost like him more in, like, supporting roles. Like, I really liked him in Grand Budapest Hotel. I like him in ensembles. I mean, this is an ensemble, so, like, I mean, he does a very good job here.
I grew up not hate. My mother hates Ed Norton.
Really?
Because
did she ever give, like, a good reason why?
I don't know if I. It's fair that it's a good reason, but she did give her reason.
Did they go my on mother? Date?
No, I wish. My mother, being a Latina, was offended that Ed Norton left Salma Hayek because they were together at one point.
Oh, wow!
She was always offended by that.
Wow!
So I'd be like watching an Ed Norton movie. She'd always be like, "Ah, turn that guy
Adios
off."
Adios mio.
Yeah, no. She's like, she'd be like, "I don't want to see
caramba.
That guy." I'm like, "Come on!
Come on! Really? Yeah."
And she
Selma
also,
got over it.
Not to bring go back to this, but like she also really. I remember like watching Keeping the Faith. She's like, "That's the dumbest premise ever."
It's such a standard a priest, you know,
and a rabbi, yeah.
And a blonde walk into a bar. Or whatever.
But so, how do you think he does in this film?
I think he does a good job because he plays a very good, like, level-headed character. You know, like the conscience.
Level-headed, vulnerable though.
Yeah.
I think that, like, the blonde dye job was the best.
Well, yeah, they give him, like, the bleached hair because he's supposed to be living
Florida.
Down in Marathon, Florida.
Yeah, whatever. But what I was going to say is I really do like this opening little interaction.
Between Will and Hannibal?
Will, yes. Because you see Hannibal...
toying.
Yeah, toying, or trying to toy with him, you know.
Yeah.
And you see Ed Norton's character, and he's... Do you think he actually didn't know it was Hannibal at that point, or do you think
No, if you know, you go in full squad, and you...
Okay, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
But, like, I could see an interpretation, like, he's trying to play the game along with Hannibal.
Yeah, so, I mean, Will is supposed to be this, like, really talented... Like, they allude to it, like, Jack Crawford, you know, played by Harvey Keitel, like, alludes to it, like, oh, you have... So, I mean, and Hannibal says it, too, like, you have such an imagination, like, that's what makes you a better agent and being able to figure all this crazy stuff out. I've only seen a few episodes of the Hannibal TV series.
Everyone who... Like, it has really diehard fans.
Yeah, but they definitely... Again, this is from the few episodes that I've seen. They definitely make Will, because he's the star of the show besides Hannibal, like, mm-hmm. It's about, like, that time. And... I don't know the actor that plays him, but they definitely make him a bit more, almost I want to say, like, on the spectrum, like, on, like, a savant, like, almost sees things in a way, like, has to take medication to calm his visuals down.
That's
of, like, him coming into a scene and piecing everything ever together.
Hugh Dancy as well.
Okay. And
what's
so...
Mads Mikkelsen or
Mads Mikkelsen.
Mikkelsen, that's
yeah,
how it's pronounced.
The famous Dutch actor.
Yeah, no, he's great.
He's awesome.
He's a very good Hannibal.
Yes, and so they almost make it, you know, like in, did you ever watch, like, Dexter, and he would come in, and he'd be like, okay,
yeah.
And so the blood splatter, like, just, like, even more intense than that, and he would have to take medication to calm himself down, and that's why, like, even in the TV show, they're bringing him back in, and he's almost, like, he's happy just being a professor at this point, and he's but this film, he does it more, I mean, he gets injured by Hannibal, he gets stabbed, like pretty bad, and it's so chilling the way he's just like, oh, you're gonna feel like a, you know, warm sensation right now.
The only thing is, like, you know, obviously Ed Norton doesn't die here. It's not like a ghost movie, so it's a little bit.
But then he gets to stab Hannibal with, I guess he had like some arrows in his office, and he's like, as far as eclectic.
Yeah,
you know?
I thought that was kind of funny.
And then he shoots him a couple times too.
We should mention this is a period piece, but probably only because it has to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they go out of their way to remind you that this is now... Well, I guess it's supposed to be, like, 1990 for the most part.
Yeah,
I guess the beginning
some
was
years
just,
later.
Yeah, then it says some years... So I guess it's, like, the late 80s, and then some years later, Will retires down to Marathon with his wife and his son, and then Jack Crawford brings him back in because now there's...
Jack Crawford, been, Harvey Keitel.
Yes, brings him back in.
I like
because,
I like the original take on Jack Crawford.
Yeah, it's played by... oh, God, why am I blanking on that? Scott Glenn.
Scott Glenn.
And he plays his most recent things have been, he was a character on The Leftovers, which the series finale was, you know, at the end of, like, or the middle of this summer, and he's also been on the Marvel series Daredevil, and then the Defenders as Stick.
Cool.
And so that's what he's been doing later years. But yeah, I like that character in Silence of the Lambs.
See, and but they couldn't do the same character, not just because of the actor. You know, Harvey Keitel is going to play things his way.
Yeah.
But that character is clearly
he plays it like the same as National Treasure.
Yeah, it's true. Other Cage.
Just going to see like a Mason.
CageClub.me.
Yeah.
But it's funny because you're right. Yeah, well, you're going to say the ring.
The Mason ring, right?
He was a Freemason the whole time. No, but that Jack Crawford is kind of like a dick, and he's kind of like a little bit like sexist towards Clarice and stuff.
Yeah.
And you don't really see that. Like, this Harvey Keitel is more of a, like,
down to business.
Yeah,
like,
down to I'm a cop, you
yeah,
know?
Like, yeah.
And so it's a little...
Hey, yo, Jesus.
It's a little different portrayal, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I still think he does a good job, but I don't see that as the same person.
But we also get two other returning characters. You get the character of Barney and Dr. Chilton, who came back.
And we'll get to them definitely in the Hannibal scenes. And Frankie Faison, that guy, who's Barney, I believe.
Yeah.
Is in another Hoffman film. I can't remember which one, because we've talked about
really?
Him.
Oh, really?
And I'll look it up while we discuss.
Okay, yeah. So he gets brought back in because these two families have been murdered in the same ways, very, very gruesome murders, and Will, you know, goes in because he just has, a conscience, and he says to his wife, like, how can I...
Yeah, I thought that was a little too easy.
It's a little easy, but that's like, I don't know, I mean, I know there's some people out there like that, so I accepted it. It was easy, but it wasn't sloppy, so I accepted it.
I thought they didn't do a good enough job on making this seem like this was the case they needed to bring him back for.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like, or
like,
they could've...
listen, I haven't called you since.
Yeah, it's been, they could have, I know it's several years later, but they could have been like, you've said no to this case, or in this case, or no, actually, it would have been better if they said, like, listen, we haven't called you, so you know this is bad.
I mean,
they kind of say, like, oh, what have you kept out of the papers? It's just one of those, I mean, once we see it, we get why he comes back, because they are these gruesome, but I get what you're saying, that they could have given, like, a little bit more. There could have been a bit more of exchange between Keitel and Norton to, like, kind of set up, like, the urgency of Will Graham coming out of retirement. But let me say this. That kind of plays part into... This is a very fast-paced film. So it's, like, an hour and 45, hour 50 minutes, this movie?
It's two.
Is it two?
Yeah, almost like 202.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I thought I watched it.
Money for Nothing, Frankie Faison is in.
Oh, yeah, he's the truck driver for the money. Yeah.
Sorry. Just
cool, there we go.
It was bothering me.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think we definitely mentioned in that episode, I feel.
He's also in...
He's in Manhunter, but a different character.
He's a different character in Manhunter, but he's also in The Wire, which is also in Baltimore.
Oh.
A very different Baltimore.
Though, very different Baltimore. But it's a very fast-paced film, and I want to say, like, point out that definitely one of, like, the longer and meatier scenes is the one that we get between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ralph Fiennes. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of fast-paced scenes, a lot of back and, you know...
Yeah, it's a slower scene.
And that's...
In a good way.
Yeah, and it's good. I think it's a testament to, again, both of those actors. It's not... I'm not going to say just Philip Seymour Hoffman, because, again, it's Ralph Fiennes.
Yes. We get a tremendous cast.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's the whole thing. You have some, like... interesting characters played by some phenomenal actors. And so maybe it's not the best shot or best directed or similar to another movie. And again, one of the greater films of all time. But again, with some interesting characters and some fantastic actors, you're going to get, you know, you're going to have a good time, in my belief.
Definitely. So, Jack Crawford gives him a tip, right? I don't know if it's a tip. He tells him to check out the crime scene, one of the crime scenes. So I was a little confused here, and I was even more confused later by this.
Okay.
He says bye to his wife. His wife's like, no, don't go. Again, really crappy role for Mary Louise Parker.
Yeah.
Because it's just such like, oh, I'm the doubting wife, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But so he goes to explore this crime scene. And I'm sorry, I actually consulted a friend at the prosecutor's office. You do not go to a crime scene for the first time at night. That is total for dramatic effect of the film.
He didn't go there at night to get... But see, he's like someone that likes being in the mindset of the killer.
Even still, the fact that he's putting lights on, he's using that flashlight. The killer's not going around with a flashlight like that, you know? This is for dramatic effect.
Okay.
If you want to return to the crime scene at night and do that, okay. Also, why are you going there alone?
I bet you there was like a squad car outside or something.
No, you even... I went back and watched this scene.
Okay.
This is one of the more poorly written scenes of the film.
Okay, yeah,
just
sure.
Just for dramatic effect. He's like going on... I thought at the time, I'm like, oh, maybe he's... Because I hadn't seen it in a while. Maybe he's unauthorized. Maybe it's like the Bureau doesn't want him to come back.
Yeah.
And Jack Crawford is asking him on the down low.
Yeah.
But in the very next scene, it's obvious that it's not because he's doing like... I don't think it's the very next scene. When is he doing that lecture? Yeah, he is, right?
Yeah.
Because, by the way, that guy from The Predator is there.
He's the Atlanta PD. Yeah, no, I wrote his name. He's the chief from Atlanta PD. I put guy from Predator.
I literally, look, I'll show you my notes. My, like, visceral at-the-moment notes.
I'm going to kill you, sucker. I'm going to kill you, sucker. That dude from Predator. Exclamation point.
Anyway, so in the house, he's, like, putting two and two together.
Yeah.
I did... Okay, so it's not one of the most poorly written scenes. I thought, like, the setup was. But I do like him... putting clues together in his head and kind of talking out loud.
Yeah, so after that scene, we get introduced to, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, Freddie Lowndes. And I thought this was, like, a little sloppy. And again, I mean, this comes from the book. I didn't read the book. Will's big thing, and he says to his wife, I'm just going there. I'm just, like, assisting. I'm just giving my knowledge. Point being, he doesn't want to put his family in harm's way. But he knows that this journalist... for this tabloid, Freddie Lowndes, like, he's pissed off at him because he took pictures of Will when he was really wounded and, like, almost, I think, like, almost kind of, like, in a coma after his...
Yeah, and they show this in the opening credits.
It is a cool opening credits, by the way.
Yeah, I do like
that. I really like that. That gives you, like, up-to-date. You see, like, them writing the first time Hannibal the Cannibal and people fainting, like...
Yeah,
in
and
the,
you also see the dumb name of the paper.
Yeah.
The Daily Tattler or something?
Yeah.
The National Tattler.
The National Tattler, yeah.
That leads no credence to this paper. Whatever.
Yeah, so I just think it's a little, I don't know, sloppy of the character of Will if he's that worried about putting himself back into this scene or whatever. Like, he's just walking so nonchalantly out of the Atlanta PD office and stuff like that. And obviously the FBI has been there. And Freddie's just waiting there taking pictures. And he's just, we just get this great slimy character from... Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's just like, how about an exclusive? And, you know, and Will pushes him up against a van and totally calls him out.
He's a writer
bullshit again.
We've seen Philip Seymour Hoffman as a writer before.
Yeah, he wrote, like, a novel about...
Yeah, he adapted his stories into a novel.
Yeah.
But I mean, we don't see much of him here.
No.
Unfortunately.
But then this is where the big part comes in, and Will kind of gets a little annoyed at Jack... because Jack pretty much says, can you speak to Lecter for assistance on this case?
And it's funny how Harvey Keitel / Jack plays this off, and he's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah, you know? Just like, oh, you caught me. It's like, I'm just doing due diligence or something like that.
But, like,
know?
You couldn't have asked him that. I mean, I guess he just wanted him to get wrapped up in the case.
Yeah, well, I think he just needed him to see, like, the horrifying thing. If he went down to, you know, Marathon and he's working on a boat and just living life with his wife and son and said, oh, I need you to come up and talk to Hannibal... you know, like the guy that almost killed you and took you away from your wife and son. So, I mean, I get that. Will is just about solving this and getting rid of the, at that time, they're calling the killer the Tooth Fairy.
The Tooth Fairy, yeah.
Then I just wrote, Hannibal Lecter is back. I just, the scene, there's, I mean, so much fun, but the one line I love the most when Will is just like, I have no time, and Anthony Hopkins just goes, I have oodles of time. It's just so... It's just one of the creepiest characters of all time, and and you can just see he has so much fun with it. Like, he just... It is going to be, like, the character he is most remembered for and just will always be on those lists of greatest bad guys.
I do like him in Amistad, though. He plays
John
Quincy Adams.
Yeah, he's great in Amistad. But
no, but...
I love him in Mask of Zorro. That is a soft spot of a movie in my heart.
You're a Zorro guy.
I love Zorro.
Your favorite, like, Latino superhero.
Definitely.
We don't have too many other Latino superheroes, unfortunately.
No.
Yet.
Yeah.
Until they turn Spider-Man to Miles Morales.
But even then, he's biracial.
That's enough. We'll take it. So after this great Hopkins scene, this is where people are divided, like I've seen, in terms of, is this trying too hard to be Silence of the Lambs, or this is awesome because it's like Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah.
I think they do a good job in this scene because we are reminded by it. Sure. But it's clearly, obviously, they want to be Silence of the Lambs here.
Of course. But I mean, when you have it in the same like cell block and you've got Anthony Hopkins playing that same character, I mean,
doing the same things, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Like, of course there's going to be comparisons, reasonably so. And as far as his performance, it's still on par.
And then we see Hoffman again briefly.
Yeah, just briefly. He's outside with his, like, you know, I guess his little partner
van,
or whatever.
You're a van
in a
guy,
van.
So.
Yeah, I'm a van guy.
A lot of van.
Taking photos
in this film.
Yeah, we're just taking photos, so we just are reminded that he's out there.
Yeah, and then we finally get to meet Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. Again, like, Silence of the Lambs, it's something like Anthony Hopkins technically only has, like, 8 minutes of screen time. And, you know, he won Best Actor, not Best Supporting Actor. A lot of people always say, like, oh, that's technically more support. He supports Clarice in that movie.
No, I know.
But, I mean, so he gets more screen time in this movie, Hannibal being the most, but then this movie he gets a decent amount of screen time, because then our main villain, the guy that we're after, as you just said, this is when we meet Ralph Fiennes. And first we hear the voice, it's a voice cameo of Ellen Bernstein as his grandmother, right? Not even his mother, it's his grandmother. And she's just saying like horrible things to a young Francis, and we get kind of from the beginning, we get into how a little bit more, like, that's fine as far as, like, understanding our killer, I guess. You know?
Yeah, I think it's weird that you don't see his face right away.
Yeah, even for a while, in this scene, we don't see his face because he's got,
like,
a
you know
pantyhose
why I think it's weird? Yeah, the pantyhose are weird. Because it doesn't really matter. This isn't the old detective shows in the 70s and probably before, they used to divide them in two things, right? A whodunit or a how catch 'em.
Yeah.
This isn't a whodunit. Because we as the audience know who did it.
Yeah.
This is a how catch him.
Yeah.
You know? And we can see his face at this point. I mean, it's not like that big of a deal. That's a cool fucking mask he's wearing and stuff. Or like, I know it's like the pants.
Yeah, it's really creepy.
The way he's wearing it. We see
the two different types of like dentures. He's got
the
like
dentures,
nice teeth.
I almost wish they played that up more later, because we don't see that look on him again.
Yeah.
Which is a little odd to me.
It's creepy.
Because it's a creepy look, and I wish we saw it more.
Yeah, and he's just like, I mean, I get, this is a little silly trivia, but it's kind of, I mean, they make it a point, like, they even comment on his body in the movie. Like, Ralph Fiennes put on 15 pounds of muscle for this movie, which is a lot of, you know, muscle weight. And he's just like, we're introduced to his character by him just like, you know, dead pressing,
yeah.
Like bench press. God. Just, like, a bunch of weight, and we just see, like, this is, like, I mean, not that, and you know, that not that Hannibal Lecter wasn't physically threatening, but
no,
more in a
more
creepy
the
way.
The refined...
Yeah, like, this guy
the
is
mind
just...
Of Hannibal
this
Lecter,
guy
right?
is just...
I'm
just,
pretty sure the book probably has him even more built than this. You know?
Yeah.
I know you probably read this, too, but I thought this was funny, that the people who potentially could have played this character...
Oh my god, this is the best of all time.
Paul Bettany...
Yeah, there's a couple of like okay ones, but the
Paul Bettany,
I know you read
yeah,
the one
no.
that's like.
Who else here? We're gonna save the best one for last. But Sean Penn,
yeah,
was somebody probably could have played it at a different angle. Our guy, not our guy, but CageClub.me guy, Nicolas Cage.
Yep.
And I mean, I'll let you drop this nugget here.
Oh my god, ladies and gentlemen, there's only been a few times where this man really pushed to be certain characters, and he never got the opportunity, but. Michael friggin' Jackson wanted to play Francis Dollarhyde. What?
Really lobbied.
What? I'm sorry. What the hell? What the hell? Like, what? Like, the other characters he wanted to play, he wanted to play Peter Pan and Hook. That was, like, his biggest one he really lobbied for. And then he also wanted to play the Joker at one point.
Well... I don't know.
So, like, I get...
I don't even know what to say.
I get Peter Pan because, like, he was just always wanted to be a kid and always wanted to fly, and he loved Peter Pan as, you know, like, as a person. Michael Jackson loved it. The Joker, I guess we would have seen the Joker do...
He's kind of like a real-life Joker.
Yeah, like, ha-ha-ha-ha! Yeah. Like, we would have seen the Joker do a mean moonwalk. I don't know. But he wants to play, like, this serial killer in... Again, like, so, I mean, sure, this is... In the same world, Anthony Hopkins is involved. We have a stellar cast in this, but it's not like, again, it's the third film in a series. Like, why this film and why that role?
Well, this is the only thing I can guess. Michael Jackson and Brett Ratner were actually friends.
Oh, that's true.
I don't know how. Maybe he directed some of his music videos.
Yeah, they knew one another from the music.
Okay, I'm not sure which ones.
Yeah.
But also, there's that famous scene in Rush Hour 2 where Chris Tucker, another big Michael Jackson,
huge Michael Jackson friend, yeah,
you know, does that song in Rush Hour 2. Right?
Yeah. Jamal Lee.
Yeah.
Jamal.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe like he heard Brett Ratner talking about it, like, "Is it, oh Brett, you gotta put me in this film."
Yeah.
That's my Michael Jackson. I'm not gonna try.
Like, you gotta. You'd just be so ignorant if you. That's my South Park Michael Jackson. You'd be so ignorant if you don't put me in this film.
Imagine Michael Jackson.
Brett, remember those good times we had in the music video sets? Remember you saw me in Thriller? I was scary. I go boo. I'll scare people.
Well, Ralph Fiennes is definitely a better actor than Michael Jackson.
Yes,
but Michael Jackson might be scarier in real life.
Yeah, well, it would have been too silly. Unless Michael Jackson all of a sudden, like, bulked up, that would have been, like...
Yes.
Imagine this turned his life around, he was still alive, I don't know.
He just, like, became the talented Michael Jackson actor.
Yeah.
He was in The Wiz.
Yeah. Hey.
He was in Men in Black 2.
Oh, my God. I'm
trying to think of other films he was in. Regardless, back on track.
Yeah, back on track. I mean, so yeah, again, we this is when we meet Francis, and I mean...
The big thing at the end of this scene is that we see a picture of Philip Seymour Hoffman in, I guess, the newspaper. And
in his, like, scrapbook that he's making.
And he crosses it out because he reads all his newspaper clippings like a good serial killer does.
And he's a big Hannibal Lecter fan as well.
Yes. So we see the two things. We see that he loves Hannibal Lecter and hates Freddy.
And we also see that he knows that that Will is back on the case.
Yeah.
Or Will is on the case, I should say. And then we get to a fun scene, and I call it Will and Hannibal's walk. And it's definitely a good change of pace. Like, we see that at one point, Hannibal, I think he says he does, like, a half hour once a week. And it's just this, like, big gymnasium room that there's this chain, and we see that there's markings on the floor, know where Hannibal, the furthest he can reach. But there still is that, like, great, like, quick moment of just, like, where he, like, you know, questions Will's, like, he says, like, "Oh, I smell that, you know, that fear on you."
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "But that's good. You have, like, you do have to have fear. Like, you still have courage, though. Like, you are, you know, for coming back."
And this is when they figure out the Red Dragon stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's
like a Mahjong piece.
Yeah. But there's also William Blake.
A William Blake painting.
Yeah.
And that's the tattoo that he has on the back.
Yeah. It is really creepy. It is a cool bad guy.
Yeah. Like I think that probably comes from the book, though.
Definitely.
The depths of the book. Some people, like, shit on Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs. But I think that's a really creepy villain, too.
Oh, fuck yeah.
He's scary.
Oh, my. Would you fuck me?
No, yeah. Was she a great big fat person?
Was she a great fat lady? Like, it's just that really... It's almost on a Philip Seymour Hoffman level.
You gotta punch it more.
Was she a great fat lady?
Oh, yeah. What's that actor's name? He's really good.
Yeah.
I'm blanking. We're terrible today with remembering
our actors. Was she a great fat lady?
But, the criticisms in that film were that, like...
Hannibal steals the show and not Buffalo.
No, not necessarily.
Oh, okay.
It's that, like... Are we saying all transgendered people are killers?
Oh, whatever.
I mean, if you watch it now, it's a little bit okay.
No, that's just.
And the second thing is, like, are all Vietnam vets killers?
It's just the reasoning behind that is that he's doing what he's doing because that's what he's into.
Well, I think
this guy, he's also technically a vet, but he's, like, killing these families and having sex with the bodies.
My tying things here, I mean, we see it later. Like, he's a vet as well.
Yeah.
And it seems like... Like, there's so many tie-ins.
I mean, I guess that's the comment of the author in a way that he saw, maybe, I don't know, maybe he saw a lot of, at one point, veterans.
It's possible. It's not, yeah. But regardless, I think they're not side villains, because Hannibal's really the side villain.
Yeah.
But the series has very good villains. Very well thought out serial killers.
Yeah. Definitely, like, interesting, and they have their own little reasonings and stuff like that. But I mean the whole thing with France is that he's got what, a cleft lip that obviously is a scar from a surgery from or whatever.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's, we meet the character of Reba, played by,
so he works at what, like a video,
well, he works for, yeah, like it's called Chroma something or other.
They like transfer video over, yeah, to things,
just different, like, photography and video, I think.
So he meets a blind girl?
Yeah, so I guess then that's kind of a coworker. Like, he looks like he's, like, does, like, transportation, like, deliveries and stuff like that. So, yeah, he meets Reba, who is blind, and she's just kind of, like, and I watched an interview, and she even calls herself, like, a very forward. I guess that's just how she is as a person that has a disability and just realizes, like, oh, I might as well be, like, open right, yeah, from the get-go. And she's like, oh, I can tell you're being shy, but, like, there's no reason to be shy. And then, I don't know, you just know, you're like, you get into that whole, like, girl, what are you getting yourself into? Like,
of course.
You know, because we know,
but,
exactly.
But no, I thought she was pretty good, because she didn't play, like, oh, I'm just the vulnerable character, I'm the vulnerable girl.
No. Yeah, she's not dumb, she just reads him the wrong way. She has just too much, like, faith in humanity?
Faith in humanity. Also, like, she's... I think there's a physical attraction there. Not visually, obviously.
Well, she says, like, oh, I talked to, like, people in the office, and they said you're, like, physically, like...
Yeah, like,
beautiful.
Strong.
Yeah. Yeah, like, strong.
And
like,
he believes he's ugly.
Yeah.
But he's a very good-looking guy, so...
Yeah.
Just, I mean, he has scar...
He has, like, the Joaquin Phoenix...
Yeah, like, nobody, like, no woman would be like, oh, that scar, I don't know. It's, like, yeah, a little scar in his lip.
No, it's just that he was, like...
This isn't Tyrion Lannister.
He was mentally abused by, like, this grandmother growing up, so he's just was,
exactly,
told, like, always, you know, shame.
Yeah,
and,
he's,
like,
a victim of abuse.
Yeah, exactly.
So the next, like, big arc here, and this is going to eventually lead to what happens to our guy, Philip Seymour Hoffman, is that, so they find a note in Hannibal's cell written on toilet paper.
Yeah, so as we said, Francis is a fan of Hannibal.
Yeah.
And he writes to him and somehow gets this message on toilet paper into Hannibal's jail cell. But then in a routine check, they find it, so they remove Hannibal. And this is a part of, like, the movie that I do really enjoy, because, again, it goes back to, like, this detective kind of work.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's
the
fast.
Urgency.
And it, like, yeah, exactly. Sense of urgency.
Get Ken Long going in and figuring out stuff.
Yeah, so there's this note, and they kind of have to break down the clues, and then, yeah, they realize that they're going to start to communicate through the newspapers.
Yeah.
Hannibal and...
So they let it happen.
Yeah, they let it happen.
But unfortunately, Hannibal, through a clever way of, they think he's talking to his lawyer, but then he contacts the operator. He does this weird thing with the phone that I do not get,
yeah,
but I'm assuming they did their due diligence.
He finds Will's address.
Yeah, and or at least just to Marathon, Florida. That's where he lives.
So we see that the Tooth Fairy... Who does not like to be called the Tooth Fairy, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the name that the paper that Philip Seymour Hoffman works for gave him, and then everyone else gave him that name.
Yeah.
And he's the Red Dragon. You know?
Yes.
He feels like... I don't know if the Red Dragon is in him or is like a spirit. He's definitely...
Well, he's part of it, but he's with every kill, he's becoming more and
more...
Yeah,
more and more the Red,
yeah,
Dragon. So the Red Dragon, we'll call,
yeah,
him. The Red Dragon and Hannibal are communicating through this letter, and they use Philip Seymour Hoffman's paper to do this.
Yes.
And in the paper... Hannibal tells the Red Dragon,
yes,
this address to the Will's address in Florida. Then, of course, the cops storm the place.
Yeah, the FBI storm down. They go down there and scoop up Will's wife and kid, and then
so just
want
to mention
to a farm.
To a farm, right? And,
yeah,
she's obviously upset. Just want to mention the whole, like, gun firing scene.
Yeah,
he's like training her to shoot a gun, and. I was like, they're definitely going to call back to this. Later.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty obvious setup.
Yeah, but it's so unnecessary, and we'll get into that. But,
okay.
But then they get the idea to just kind of do a fake setup, and this is where our guy Philip Seymour Hoffman comes to play.
Yeah, so they know clearly that Francis reads this paper.
Yeah.
And so, because that's the whole thing. Like, one murders in Georgia, the others in, I forget, it's another state, but then there's also a, something happened to a guy up in Chicago. So they just know that this guy is in, like, yeah, a six-hour drive.
He ends up being in St. Louis, I think.
Yeah, okay. And then, so they use Freddie Lound and bring him in. And he's just so cocky.
Yeah.
He just thinks he's just like, you know, he's like, you scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Well, yeah, because they found him doing some kind of crime.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's what it is.
And it's...
Yeah, he, no, not just a, like, a horrible federal offense of you having fake FBI.
Yeah, I mean, it's something like I'm sure reporters have done in the past.
That's
like
pretty bad.
Slime ball reporters.
Impersonating FBI.
Yeah, agent. To try to get, like, a scoop on a different story.
Yeah, well, I think he wanted the pictures of the victims. That's
yeah,
what they want.
Something like that. Yeah. Whatever. But so they say to him, you know, we're not going to throw you in jail. You just have to write the story we want you to write.
Yeah.
And he knows it's fake, but they're...
Yeah, Crawford and Graham, like, totally use him as a setup. But like you said, like, he knows that this is, like, to lure him in. Because...
And he's like, just give me the exclusive.
Yeah, exactly.
When you catch him.
Because they make it pretty obvious because he's like, oh, make sure to get the name of that building in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, Freddie's not dumb.
No, so they have a fake place... Where Will's gonna be?
Yeah, he says
have,
like this is
like,
where he's living in the meantime.
And they also have like quotes by Lecter insulting the Red Dragon, and it's just stuff to piss him off.
Yeah.
And the idea is to make Will Edward Norton the bait.
Yeah.
So that they come after him in this like particular home or location.
Which as smart agents, like Jack being the head of obviously a department, and Will being this like. Amazing, you know, agent that he's supposed to be. How did they not? I know, like, I mean, ultimately, again, like, they don't. Even if Freddy is a slime ball and Will hates him for what he did, like, they're not trying to get him killed. How did they not, like, also. I would have had someone following Freddy that whole time, too, I guess is what I'm saying. I would have been.
Maybe they just didn't care, but again,
I know,
don't they want to catch this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
He should have been under surveillance as well.
So this plan backfires, and we see Francis pick up a paper early in the morning. That's like his usual thing. He goes to the same place and, you know, like picks it up from this guy at wee hours in the morning. And he sees this article and obviously gets really pissed off. And it's kind of funny. Philip Seymour Hoffman pulls up and gets all riled up and pissed off because this van is in his spot. At the National Tattler in the parking garage, and then he just kind of gets pulled in, and Francis's big thing to do, I guess, is use, what is that, chloroform kind of right away to silence him and bring him in. Cut to Freddie Lounds in this old wooden wheelchair, and he's glued to the chair.
Did we mention that he lives in a nursing home? I think so, right? If we
haven't. Yeah.
He lives in this like giant nursing home.
This no longer.
No, sorry. To be clear, abandoned nursing home. You know,
yeah.
It's no longer in service, but there's all these creepy wheelchairs and old furniture around.
And
it's a cool lair.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah. Great word for it, lair. And so we just see Philip Seymour Hoffman, chubby and in white briefs, just glued to this chair. And you read this? I see you giving me a little nod. Philip Seymour Hoffman demanded that he...
Insisted. I don't know if
I'm sorry.
Demanded.
I'm sorry.
Like,
that's
fuck
the right,
you
yeah,
guys.
Yeah. I would have said insisted if I was reading my notes exactly. He insisted that he be glued to the chair. That's crazy.
With real glue.
Yeah. I mean, there must be, obviously, you must be able to pour...
No, it's not like the most
like
intense glue.
Paint thinner or something. You see him pulling it. You see, like,
yeah,
the skin and
his
hair, too.
He's actually glued to this chair.
Yeah.
That's commitment.
And so, I mean, you know what? Before we get into this, let's play this nice, this beefy clip for you.
What am I doing here?
Atoning, Mr. Lounds.
I haven't seen your face. I couldn't possibly identify you. I work for the... National Tattler would pay a big reward. A big reward for me. I mean, $500,000, like $1 million, maybe.
Do you know who I am, Mr. Lounds?
No. And I don't want to know. You know, believe me.
According to you, I'm a vicious, perverted sexual failure. A bottom-feeding lowlife who's about to go down in flames. I think you know now, don't you?
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm doing, Mr. Lowndes?
No. But I'd like to. I really want to understand. And then all my readers could understand, too.
I am not a man. I began as one. But each being that I change makes me more than a man, as you will witness.
I don't need to see you. No.
Oh, but you must, Mr. Lowndes. You're a reporter. You're here to report. Open your eyes and look at me.
No.
If you won't open them yourself, I'll staple your eyelids to your forehead.
I don't want to.
Open your eyes! You want to know what I am?
More than anything, I was afraid to ask.
Do you see now?
Yeah, I see. Oh, God.
Mrs. Jacoby in human form. Do you see?
Yes.
Mrs. Leeds in human form. Do you see?
Yes.
Mrs. Jacoby changing.
Oh, my God.
Mrs. Leeds changing. Do you see? Mrs. Jacoby reborn. Do you see? Mrs. Leeds reborn. Do you see?
Please, no.
No? No what?
Not me. Not me.
Why did you write lies, Mr. Lowndes?
Graham told me to lie, Graham. It wasn't me.
Will you tell the truth now?
Yes.
About me. My work?
Oh, yes, yes.
My becoming?
Yeah, y'all. Yeah.
I am the dragon, and you call me insane. You are privy to a great becoming, and you recognize nothing. You are an ant. In the afterbirth, it is in your nature to do one thing correctly. Before me, you rightly tremble. But fear is not what you owe me, Mr. Lowndes. You owe me all. Read. That's all, Mr. Lowndes. You did very well.
You let me go now?
Soon. There's one more way I can help you to better understand.
I want to understand. I do, and I'm really going to be fair from now on. You know that. Hello?
Oh, God, no!
So I laughed when he was like, I'm the dragon, because it just totally reminded me of Game of Thrones. You know, in the first season, I think, I forgot his name, like Daenerys' brother.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm the dragon every time he gets mad. So, yeah, maybe it's Targaryen blood.
This is all, but like there, that is like funny. I didn't think of that. But it's a terrifying scene. Like that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, this is also a very good point to bring. Danny Elfman made the music for this movie. I mean, he's just a great composer. Like some of the music in this movie is pretty powerful. And like when he's just like, it's just like Ralph Fiennes just like noise he makes. Like, and he's just flexing, and we just see the tattoo like expanding. Yeah, and no, it was almost like at first I remember watching this movie for the first time being like, is his body about to transform? Like I thought it was gonna go in a really weird like,
well, it also reminds me of like that fetish that people have where they actually believe they're the animals.
Oh.
And like there's a lot of people who believe they're dragons.
Oh.
You can look it up on YouTube. I can't.
That makes me think of Starsky and Hutch and Will Ferrell.
A movie we cited way
two dragons. Yeah,
way too much on this podcast.
Which now James Gunn is making a Starsky and Hutch series for Amazon. So you're welcome.
Whatever.
Pay attention. But yeah, to get back to our main man, I wrote down like, I mean, I just love the way he was saying like, I didn't see your face. Like he's just covering his. I mean, as anyone would be. Mm-hmm. But just like I said, because he goes from that cocky, arrogant, slimy reporter into like clearly also that same guy covering his ass. But at the same time, like you do feel for that guy because you're like, oh my God, this scenario is terrifying.
It's a scary situation. Because
he knows what this guy is capable of and what he's done. And most likely he's not going to make, but he's just trying to, like, I didn't see your face. He's just like, oh, they'd pay big money, you know, like, I mean, and then just that, you know, like, the way he's crying, it's just that, like, really, like, it just reminds me of, like, it just went to, like, a visceral, like, child experience in a way. He's just like, I don't want to. Like, it's just really, Philip Seymour Hoffman. Why anyone ever wrote, like, sure, it's a small role or whatever, but I think he just does a great job with it.
Yeah, no, he's not. I mean, it's great. He's also glued himself to a chair, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like, talk about.
And speaking of chair, we get his death right after this.
Yeah, that's a pretty memorable death, so I forget our
yeah, what's
toll
our death
right
tally?
Now. I think we're on 4 or 5.
Maybe we can do this quick. We're not sure about My New Gun.
Yeah, we're not sure with My New Gun. But after that, you've got My Boyfriend's Back, The Getaway, Montana.
Montana, another big death of his. Almost Famous.
Shut up. I made the bad joke with Manzi that I said Patch Adams. And that was, Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, of course. Another Freddy death.
So that's four. So this is...
5, maybe 6.
This is 5.
Maybe 6.
Oh, maybe 6 because of My New Gun. Yeah.
We're not exactly all right. Here.
So that's fine. So it's a and this goes up there.
And let's stop. You know, let's not allude to it. So his death is literally he just gets thrown at the office.
Yeah, I mean you heard it at the end of that clip. Yeah. Like also like so, he thinks he's in the clear because Francis is having him like read this you know letter or whatever
yeah, he reads
or
a statement.
The statement. Thank you. And then all of a sudden, he just comes up and, like, I don't know where he exactly... It almost looks like he's going to, like, kiss him, but he bites his lips. We don't see it exactly.
Yeah, what did he bite something off?
Yeah, he bites, like, his lips off, I think.
Ugh, gross.
And you heard, you know, him screaming like that. And then just this cold cut.
I don't know if he bites his lips off, because how could he make that tape?
So no, after.
Articulately.
After he does it. He did it after.
He recorded the entire thing? Because yeah, it sounded like there was other words.
No, that's the end of the tape, because then they go to the scene.
So, like, yeah, it could be his tongue, you know?
Yeah, it could be, yeah, tongue. It's either his, like, tongue or lips. And then just this cold cut. And again, we almost, like, think it's this newsstand, and we're like, oh, are we going to see, like, Francis going up to him or, like, this other news guy and picking up a paper? Nope, it's just this, like, little old man setting up his newsstand and, like, you know, the crack of dawn. And he just hears this rickety noise, and it's this. He's still alive, right? I see him like moving in the chair. It looks like
I don't know if he's necessarily alive. I think that might be just.
But by that point, you'd be in like shock. And, like,
yeah, the body's yeah. like shocked reaction.
Yeah.
It's
just a total in flames. This chair rolling down this hill toward, and I never noticed
on fire,
it. I never noticed this before until watching it this time, but it's at the bottom of the hill. It's just, they kind of cut right away, but you see it saying the National Tattler.
Yeah.
So it's just rolling him right into
his old office, yeah, essentially. That, I mean, that's a crazy death.
Yeah, that's a crazy death. So I mean that's the end of our.
Unfortunately, we lose Hoffman.
But that was a fun. That was a fun little role.
Nice little arc. Nice little role. I would like to see more of him, as I always would.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. It's not a very dynamic character. Not a very deep character.
No. But like I said,
you showed a bit of range in that death scene.
It was just, yeah, exactly. Like we got that fun, like, 5-minute, like, scene between two great actors, like, very much, I mean, you know, the same era of, you know, acting. You know, I put them in the same age class and everything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he worked with, you know, Ed Norton in the one scene. We're going to obviously see him in 25th Hour with him much more. But it was, so it was, like, a fun character, memorable, cool, like, death. And so, I mean, hey, I'll take it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, again, good to see him. It's not like we watched a bad movie.
Yeah.
So I think it's fair to say at this point, the film becomes the Ralph Fiennes film.
Yeah, and it becomes...
Even more than the Ed Norton film, I mean.
No, it becomes like the Ralph Fiennes and like the...
Emily Watson.
Emily Watson film, because like we see their relationship blooming and...
To be fair, she doesn't know he's the killer. Obviously.
No, she has no idea. Yeah. he just sells it because like there's the few more times that he has the argument up in the attic with himself, as you know, he's like, "No, you can't take her." And then, I mean, the biggest thing is that we finally, Will and Jack learn that so the company's called Chromalox.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, right before that scene, I do like he like you said, he doesn't want to kill Emily Watson's character.
Yeah.
And he feels like he can destroy the dragon,
mm-hmm,
if he can destroy the painting of the dragon. So he realizes it's at the Brooklyn Museum, so he goes to Brooklyn. He sneaks in, finds the print in the back. I mean,
sneak in. That's the weird thing. Well, he's, like, written a dissertation.
He sneaks in a sense. Sorry. He has an alternate identity. It's not really him.
Oh, of course.
He says
yeah.
He's writing, like, a paper, and yeah, he lets him see it. He eats the original
print.
He knocks her out and eats the original print.
Yeah.
I guess in a hoping that that'll kill the dragon, but instead...
It just makes him more of the dragon.
Yeah, he becomes the dragon.
Yeah, so then Will and Jack figure out that it's the tying between these two murders, because that's the big thing. They're you know, they're on a... It's going to be like another week or two at the most before he would go on a killing spree again of another family. And... Which we do. That's a really creepy scene. We see when she stays over, it's on mute. She's like, "Oh, can we keep listening to the music?" And we see him watching the home video of the next family that will be his victims. That's a cool and creepy
scene.
So
you alluded to this. He works at this lab.
Yeah.
And
that's the tying in. He figures out his victims via these compilation home videos.
Yeah, and they seem like really perfect families.
Yeah, they tend to be like families of five, it looks like, and they have a pet, a nice yard.
Yeah, I guess it's like the family he never had.
Yeah.
Did he grow up in that nursing home or something?
I guess that's what it seems, that like maybe his grandmother owned it and then she...
Yeah, she clearly abused him.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, called him horrible words and threatened to cut his penis off. And, just like,
yes.
All the things that make you into a, you know, murderer.
Sorry, I just want to get back to my notes. So yeah, so we see that scene. It's super creepy, and then he eventually pulls the switcheroo. I mean, spoiler alert.
Yeah, he goes back to the company, sees that Will and Jack are there, and so he runs off and he runs to Reba's place, and there's this weird little side character. I think his name is Randy.
Yeah.
Randy, of course. And he's hitting on Reba in the beginning of the film when we first meet her.
But he kind of tells Reba to get lost. Is Emily Watson's character.
Yeah.
Because he knows he's probably eventually going to kill her.
Yeah.
You know. But then he sees that she's macking it with another guy.
Yeah.
But she's not, like, she definitely likes Ralph Fiennes more than this other guy.
Yeah, but he kind of blew her off, so she's giving this guy that's always hitting on her time.
Him a shot, and he sees this, and he gets pretty angry.
Goes up, and as Will assumed earlier, or, like, kind of put together that he probably uses this silencer because the kids didn't wake up or whatever during the crimes. We see him go up, and he just shoots this guy right on, like, her little walkway. And then knocks on the door. She thinks that it's Randy, and then he goes up and just chloroforms her. And we think that he just leaves that body of Randy there. And then we cut to the house, and pretty much he's just, like, threatening to kill her and then kill himself.
Yeah, and he's put gasoline all around
the house. He lights the house on fire, and then eventually we're led to believe that he shoots himself.
Yeah, he lets, which is weird, right? Like, she sees him shoot himself.
Well, she doesn't see it.
But how, okay, so how does this happen? She's standing right in front of him.
Yeah.
He has a gun.
Yeah.
She screams, the blood splatters on her
face. So he had that body there that we just didn't see.
But how do you pull that move off? Explain that to me. If you're in front of somebody, he just grabbed the body?
Yeah, he had the body, like, set on the floor, and then he's talking to her.
But she, oh, I keep forgetting she's blind.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She didn't see it.
But I don't know. Like,
boom. No, I trust me. I know. It's not, like, the most brilliant, like,
also, it seems to come together very fast.
That's what I'm saying. I guess it's just, like, off camera that the, like, we just threw the our shots. Like, if there was a really, really wide shot, we would have seen a body lying there, and it's Randy's body. But we are, and the FBI, for time being, for, like, a week's time, is, I mean, because she comes out and says, like, I felt his, like, face or whatever.
Why do you think he doesn't kill her?
Because I think it was still just, she would be the credibility on top of this body that he's lied to, you know, him for him to get
away. It's a lot of fast thinking.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's the last act of a desperate man.
But it's great last act of a desperate man.
Yeah, I think he knows eventually they'll do a DNA test, and that's what they do, is, and then they realize, and then the whole thing.
Yeah, We think he's dead, but we really don't. Did you?
No.
I know you had seen it before, but no. I had seen it in a while, and I didn't remember.
No, like, I'm just, no, like,
way it ends.
No, because number one, really, that crazy of a guy is going to kill himself, and we're not going to see it on camera. We're just going to see blood splatter on her face.
Yeah, so they brought this detective out of retirement to solve a case that he doesn't really even have to solve.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Will didn't even have anything to do with it.
And this will be my other big criticism of the film. And again, I like this film. But it doesn't. The tension at the end of Silence of the Lambs, and of course it's going to be compared to Silence of the Lambs. I don't care what people say.
Yeah.
The tension at the end of Silence of the Lambs, when Clarice isn't that home, you know, when they think it's the one home and she knocks on another
home.
Oh
my God.
And you're like, holy shit, no, it's just her at this home.
Yeah. That's a good trick to switcheroo.
I'm getting, like, goosebumps right now thinking about that scene.
Yeah. The panic that's put into this, like, you know, like, inexperienced, like, tiny woman knocking on the door solely, like, the SWAT team is at the other house and she's there by herself.
And you watch that now and you still feel it.
Oh my God. No, well, that whole scene and then the night vision,
great. Here, you don't feel that.
No, it's not nearly as climatic.
You feel more tension, I think, in that scene we were talking about at the beginning with Ed Norton and Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
Here, we kind of know something's up here.
We know something's up, but, I mean, you still, like, are fearful for, like, the wife and the kid. So it's like the kid wants, so then we cut to...
No, here, okay?
Oh, here.
At the end, yes.
Oh, sure.
There's tension there, and it's not going to be as big as Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
But we know it's not the ending at the home that's on fire.
Yeah.
We know something's up, and it's just that... It's dramatic, and the whole house comes apart, you know, when they get there. And it's like a actually nice visually, but it falls a little flat for me. Because we know it's not a surprise when he comes to get them.
Yeah.
At the end, and like what you've been alluding to is that he comes down to Florida.
Yeah, they're back down in Florida, and he's still, you know, they're living in the house that he knew. But
so he really didn't die.
They think it's fine, but then someone calls, like, one of the other FBI agents. He calls Jack and says, like, we got the DNA results back, and it's like not, and that's not Francis Dolarhyde's. It's this guy, you know, Randy, and they just didn't even, no one knew that he was missing because he was going to be on vacation for a week or whatever. And then we cut to Florida, and the son wants to make some s'mores, so he goes inside to get some marshmallows, and then they're both, you know, him and Mary Louise Parker, like, oh, where is he? And Will's like, I'll go inside. And then he goes inside. And this is where, like, this is where it's, like, creepy and terrifying. He goes inside, and a trait of Red Dragon is to crack the mirrors in the house.
And when he sees
and that. And so when he sees that, then you go, oh, like, again, you are expecting it. So it's not, like Clarice and then her whole thing of like knocking on that door, and then even then she's inside and she's talking to the guy, and then it takes the moment of like whatever kind of like butterfly moth thing that is,
yeah,
for her to know like this is the place.
The mirror was the moth thing,
yeah,
but obviously so much better in Silence of the Lambs.
Yes,
but still pretty good here.
Yeah, so but you see that, and again Danny Elfman's music really helps, like it's just like that, you know, the screechy like violins. And so he goes upstairs, and Francis is holding a big piece of glass as like a knife against Will's son's throat, and this is where like Will reverse psychology or whatever starts yelling
because he read his old diary,
yeah,
or something.
Oh yeah, that's the whole thing. When we go back to Florida, he's like saying to his wife like, oh, like not that I feel bad for him, but you like you start understanding like where he's coming from, because in the vault, the safe thing or whatever, they find this big book that, again, we were saying has all the clippings
and stuff,
everything.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I feel bad for him.
Yeah. And so then he goes inside and knows to kind of use those, again, those like slurs and all the negative things that his grandmother used to say to him. And he sees that his son, out of obviously, you know, rightfully so, fear, has peed his pants, and he starts saying like, oh, you want me to cut that thing off, and all the really negative things that we heard, like,
yeah,
Ellen Burstyn's voice.
By the way, the psychological,
oh my god,
that,
yeah,
this kid is going to have,
yeah,
because in that moment, one scary moment,
but right after that, then his dad does like save him and put him underneath and like hide, yeah, and like he sees that whole
but
thing.
He'll flash back to that, as flash back to his dad like saying,
yeah, yelling
those
all
things.
but Francis freaks out and drops him and goes after Will, and they have like a tussle. He cuts him a little bit across the chest, and then he tells his son to run. They go into the other room. He locks the room and gets into the closet to pull out the door. We're waiting for Francis to rush through the door. Will's got the gun, but then he, you know, the scary guy does, disappears for a second. Then we hear Mary Louise Parker's voice, and we see her coming up, and it's, you know, it's like the, again, it's Marathon, Florida, so they have all kind of doors to call those. But you
like,
can, like,
closet doors.
Yeah, we can see, it's like the beveled air breeze, yeah, doors, and so we can see her through it, and then Will sees Francis coming up behind her. He tells her to get down, and Francis also has a gun. So they get into a shootout, and Will gets shot several times. Francis gets shot several times. And then we cut to that brilliant setup of, you know, because she rushes in to see how Will's doing. And then he's, like, mumbling something. And she realizes, oh, it's, like, turn around and finish him or whatever. And she puts, like, one in his head, one in his cheek, one in his chest. And that is the official end of Francis Dolarhyde.
It's so pointless, though.
A.K.A.
Like,
the Red
Dragon. The setup, like, oh, let's teach her how to fire a gun. So she,
yeah, I mean, that
kind of
close, yeah,
who's disabled on the ground at point blank range,
yeah,
and said, oh, I'm a woman, I missed, even,
yeah,
if she did miss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so yeah, I mean, whatever, but like it's so silly.
It's silly, but I mean,
would you have said if she shot him right there, which again didn't think was necessary anyway, but if she shot him right there, would you have been like, wait a minute, how does she know how to use a gun?
You would just start going into, we would be having the conversation of, well, her husband's an FBI agent, so I'm sure like he's like,
also he's on the ground right there,
yeah, he's slowly like getting, yeah. I mean, he could have gone back up and gotten over, and like,
it's not like if she had a sniper moment, like he's chasing the sun or something,
yeah,
and she's in the house and she, yeah, like sniper shoots him, then I'd be like, wait a minute, okay, like,
sure. Yeah, it's,
but regardless. And that's pretty much our ending.
Yeah, then we just see, you know, obviously the cops show up, the FBI show up, and then we find out via voiceover by Hannibal Lecter. He writes, you know, he has written, even we learned at the beginning of the film, oh, he wrote Will a Christmas card at one point. And he's like, oh, I read that you're doing better or whatever. And then we see Will and his family on their boat and they're sailing. And then the greatest little thing at the end is then Dr. Chilton coming down to Hannibal's cell and says, like, oh, I'm sure you're not interested or whatever, in his douchey Dr. Chilton ways, and says, there's this young, you know, FBI agent here to talk to you. And it's like, oh, she's very pretty. And he's like, oh, you know, bring her in. And
oh, this is a prequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Let me just tell you. So is Red Dragon, or let me ask you, is Red Dragon the Rogue One to...
essentially.
I mean, it does talk about, you know, Rogue One goes right into Episode 4, New Hope. This goes right into, you know, Clarice showing up in Silence of the Lambs. So,
yeah, I mean, it's an...
Too bad we never got a Clarice, like, Will team up on another. I mean, it would have sucked, but... So I guess not too bad.
I don't know. Maybe in the Hannibal series, he meets like a teenage Clarice. Yeah. Like, oh, that's why I want to join the FBI.
So we said, you know, fun little role of Philip Seymour Hoffman, but I mean, clearly I enjoyed this movie. I mean, did you enjoy this movie?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I think Rotten Tomatoes is fair.
Oh yeah, what's
69% on Rotten Tomatoes?
It's pretty. Yeah,
74%, which is pretty close for the audience.
Sure. You know what, I don't have a gripe with that. That's
no, like, it's a good movie.
Yeah.
I would recommend seeing it, you know, if you haven't seen it.
I'm curious. Look up Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the... come on.
No, I'm curious. Because sometimes you're really surprised by, you know, a great movie and what Rotten Tomatoes... Because Rotten Tomatoes is like a new... I know they, you know, put a bunch of... different, it all comes from, you know,
critics
and
scores,
that kind of stuff, but I just feel like obviously it's
95-95.
Very fair.
Yeah, exactly. If you want Hannibal,
no, it's fine.
Hannibal,
don't even look up Hannibal Rising. We're gonna keep this to Anthony Hopkins.
39%, 62% audience. 39% critics. Yeah. So. Ray Liotta, sorry, there's a picture of him here. So yeah, I mean, that's fair. I think that it's definitely like a good movie. It's a movie to see. It's not a great movie. It's a great movie to see if you've seen Silence of the Lambs. You sure. Don't need to see Hannibal to see.
No, yeah, if I was going to go, yeah, definitely.
To see Red Dragon, not at all, you know. If you want to stick to the films.
And for funsies, I'd still say watch Silence of the Lambs than Red Dragon.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean... It doesn't work the other way. I don't believe it works the other way.
Well, I mean, one could, like... It doesn't work the other way, but one could say... Like, I could see someone making the argument saying, since it's not as good of a film, like, maybe you'd enjoy it more if you watch it first.
I guess, but I mean...
But I think what's more fun is because you kind of know...
No, because the callbacks are a big thing in Red Dragon.
Yeah.
It's an important thing, because then there's so many tongue-in-cheek, like, wink-wink, nod-nod things... Mm. That it's definitely better to see Silence of the Lambs first. So definitely recommend Silence of the Lambs, but not a Hoffman film.
Yeah.
Definitely recommend Red Dragon. And from everything I hear and from the little episodes I've seen, it's definitely a show I want to see. I want to definitely binge watch. I was going to call it Hamilton.
Hamilton.
I definitely want to see Hamilton if anyone has tickets. I definitely want to binge watch the Hannibal series.
Yeah.
Like, from everything I've
seen. It's got Larry Fishburne.
Our guy, Larry Fishburne. It's definitely a series I want to catch on, like, binge watch. I saw, like, again, a couple episodes in the first season. But
yeah.
Hoffman's performance, you disagree with those critics? You thought it was good?
Yeah, I mean, it's a small, simple character, but I think he did the best with it and had a fun, again, that the scene that we played for you, you know, was a nice... meaty, fun, like, I just imagine that being, like, a fun scene and him being, like, I'm going up against, like, Ralph Fiennes, like, glue me to a fucking chair. Like,
So, yeah, I mean, that's Red Dragon. Definitely check it out.
Brian, anything new going on with you?
I was just a guest on one of my favorite CageClub.com me. That's cageclub.me podcast.
Cageclub.me
podcast. Yeah, Wistful Thinking.
Wistful Thinking. I'm hoping to be a guest on that in the future.
Yeah, definitely. It was a blast.
What'd you guys talk about?
Wishbone, an obscure PBS TV show about a Jack Russell Terrier reading books.
Hey, what's
books.
The story?
What's the story, Wishbone? I was a little disappointed with rewatching Wishbone, not going to lie, but it was a blast. Thank you, Kara. Thank you, Jordan, for letting me be on that show.
Yeah.
Check it out at cageclub.me, as we've been repeating over and over again, and all the other places.
That's cageclub.me.
Any place our podcast is available. If you're listening to us now, you can also listen to Wistful Thinking on that same
platform. On cageclub.me.
Yes, or any platform.
Yes.
iTunes,
Google Play, Stitcher.
Google Play, Stitcher, all those things. Yeah. Definitely check it out. And check out all the other great shows on Cage Club.
Dot me.
So next week we have...
As we said, 25th Hour.
25th Hour.
Yes. A Spike Lee film.
Linked here. So we're working on a guest. It's not finalized yet.
It's not finalized yet, yeah.
But definitely tune in. As always, like, listen, share, subscribe. Tell your friends. Leave a comment, like we said. Leave a review on iTunes, because apparently that helps an algorithm.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah,
that's what
guys,
I've heard
hit up,
from other
hit up
podcasts.
iTunes. Unfortunately, iTunes is very selfish and doesn't tell us things, so we don't know how many listens we have
that's
via
Apple
that.
That's Apple for you.
No, I'm an Apple guy, but I mean,
I know
we
you're
do.
A drone.
Anyway, but I mean, besides all that, stay uncool.
Stay uncool, Hoff fans.
Sexy thing, you.